Okay, so picture this. You're standing on a front lawn. It's a Saturday morning. The sun's out. There's, a coffee cart. And there's this crowd of people all nervously looking at their phones.
Yep, I know the scene.
And right in the middle, there's one person who is like the center of the entire universe, the shouting, the pointing, the numbers, going once, going twice. It just looks like absolute chaos, like high stakes theater.
It does. It really does. It's high drama. I mean,
Yeah.
you've got people's life savings just hanging in the balance for a few minutes.
Exactly. It feels so raw. But today we're going to kind of pull that all apart because we've got our hands on this document, this set of standards and protocols for professional property auctioneering. And let me tell you, what looks like chaos is, well, it's a performance, a really, really rigid, legally bound performance.
Scripted is absolutely the right word. It's amazing how much structure is hiding behind that fast-talking persona. We're not just talking about, how to sell a house. The source material we're digging into today, it lays out the actual competencies. Things like how to control a crowd, manage some big legal risks, and how to ethically manipulate momentum.
Manipulate momentum. Okay, I want to get into that
Yeah.
because our mission today is really to deconstruct the auctioneer, not the sales pitch, but the actual machinery. We're going to cover everything the source lists from like safety hazards and disruptive bidders to vendor bids and why failing to sell a house is actually a skill.
And that's probably the most misunderstood part of the whole profession.
So let's start where the document does, the pregame. I kind of always thought the auction just starts when the auctioneer, taps the mic, but this is the work starts way, way before anyone shows
Oh,
up.
long before. The very first section in these standards, it's all about prep. And what's interesting is that the first thing on the list isn't price, it's not marketing, it's safety.
Safety, that feels a bit, I don't know, bureaucratic. I mean, we're on a driveway, right? Not a building site.
You'd think so, but absolutely. Think about the liability. The protocol says the auctioneer has to assess suitability of auction site and identify risks to self and others. You're inviting the public onto private property.
Right.
If the auctioneer sets up and blocks the only exit, or there's a loose paving stone right where someone's standing, that's a workplace safety incident.
So they're literally checking for tripping hazards.
They're checking for everything. Is the PA system grounded? Is there a dog that's going to start barking and drown out a crucial bid? Is the sun directly in the bidder's eyes? The source treats that front lawn like a temporary workplace.
Okay, that definitely takes some of the romance out of it. You're there to buy your dream home, and the auctioneer is looking for loose cables.
They have to. And once the physical space is secure, then they have to secure the legal space. The source lists this requirement to review auction documentation. This means checking the instructions, the contracts, and, really importantly, the reserve price.
The reserve price. So that's the magic number. But why does the auctioneer have to review it? Isn't that what the lawyers do?
The lawyer draws it up, sure, but the auctioneer executes it. If the auctioneer gets the property description wrong, sells the wrong title, for instance, that whole contract could be invalid. They have to confirm the number of registered bidders, check for any co-owner bids. They need to know every single player.
Okay, I saw bidding by authority in the notes. That's like when someone sends a friend to bid for them, right?
Yes, but it is so risky. Imagine this. The hammer falls at $2 million. The winning bidder holds up his phone and says, "Oh, sorry, I was bidding for my brother. He just texted me to stop." If that authority wasn't verified in writing beforehand, you have a huge problem. The whole sale just collapses.
Wow. So they're basically doing a background check on everyone before the game even starts.
Exactly. You can't just look out at the crowd and hope for the best. You have to know, is that person in the back just a nosy neighbor, or are they holding a signed form that lets them bid up to $1 million?
So, lawn checked, paperwork checked. But then there's the human part. The source talks about this final check-in with the vendor, the seller, for final instructions.
And this is where the technical meets the emotional. The seller is usually inside the house, just unbelievably stressed.
I bet.
The auctioneer is the bridge between that anxiety and the public's money. The protocol requires this final chat. It's not just casual, it's to confirm the strategy.
What kind of strategy, other than sell the house for a lot of money?
It's more subtle, like, do we stick to the reserve no matter what? Or if we get close, should I pause and come inside or just keep pushing?
Yeah.
How aggressive should I be with vendor bids? It's like the final huddle before the team takes the field.
Okay, huddle's over. The auctioneer walks out. We're in section two, the opening. And this is where I think a lot of people just tune out, when they start reading all that legal stuff super fast.
It feels like that, but it's not a tactic to bore you. It's a legal shield. The source says they must read out terms and conditions according to legislative requirements.
Legislative. So it's the law.
It's mandated by law. This is not improv. If they miss a required disclosure, like the rules on cooling off periods or penalties for dummy bidding, the whole sale could be challenged later.
It's like the terms and conditions no one reads, but it has to be said out loud.
Precisely. And right after that, they have to identify property and vendor in relation to the contract. They have to be crystal clear. You are bidding on this specific piece of land. No confusion.
But then comes the first real test, right? The source says they have to respond to questions from potential bidders. Now, that feels like a trap. Can I just ask anything? Like, is the fence actually on the boundary line?
You can ask. But for the auctioneer, this is a total tightrope walk. They have to answer truthfully. Consumer protection laws are really strict. You can't lie. But they also can't take on liability for things they don't actually know.
So if I ask, is the roof in perfect condition? And they say yes, and then it leaks.
That's a massive problem for them.
Yeah.
That's a breach of auction legislation, which is another thing the source says they have to know inside and out. So a good auctioneer deflects. They'll say something like, the contract makes no statement on the condition of the roof. I'd suggest you rely on your own building inspection.
Right. So they're helpful without getting sued.
And they have to do it without killing the vibe. If they look rattled by a question, the whole room can smell fear.
Uh-huh.
And then momentum is dead before it even starts.
Which brings us right to the action. Section 3, managing the flow. The source talks about using appropriate bidding increments. Seems weird to me. If someone wants to give you money, why would you care how small the amount is?
Because momentum is everything. If the bidding is at, say, $1 million, and someone tries to bid $1,050,000, a $50 bid, it just kills the energy. It makes the whole thing feel slow and petty.
So they actually reject money.
They reject the increment to get more money later. A good auctioneer has the confidence to say, no, sir, I'm not taking $50 at this level. I'm looking for $10,000. They're training the crowd. Fast bids create urgency. Small bids make people think the price has hit its ceiling.
That makes a lot of sense. You're forcing the pace. But okay, here's the part that always gets people confused, and it's right here in the source. The vendor bid.
Ah, yes. The most controversial tool in the kit.
The protocol says using vendor bidding as appropriate according to legislative requirements. What is this? Is the auctioneer bidding against the real buyers?
Sort of, yes. A vendor bid is a bid made by the auctioneer on behalf of the seller.
But isn't that fake? It sounds like you're just making the price up.
Well, it's not fake because it has to be transparent. By law, the auctioneer has to announce it clearly. They'll say, the bid is with me on behalf of the vendor. It's used as a strategy. Say the bidding stalls at $800,000, but the reserve is $1 million. The auctioneer might place a vendor bid at $900,000 just to say, look, we're not even close to selling yet.
It's like a reset button.
It's a nudge. But, and this is key, the source stresses according to legislative requirements. If you do it wrong, if you don't announce it, or if you place one after the reserve price has been met, that's illegal. That's what a dummy bid is.
Got it. Okay, so it's a legitimate tool. But what about when the crowd doesn't play along? The source lists a bunch of disaster scenarios, like disruptive bidders.
Right. The hecklers.
What's the protocol for that? If someone just yells out, this place is a total dump.
The auctioneer has to have a strategy ready. You can't just get into a shouting match. The source lists dealing with disruptive bidders as a specific competency. It's about acknowledging them, neutralizing what they said, and then pivoting right back to the value.
Okay, give me an example. How do you pivot from, this place is a dump?
You smile and say, it's a fantastic renovation opportunity, sir. I'm glad you see the potential. Now, who wants to bid on this amazing blank canvas?
Wow, that's smooth. You turn the insult into a selling point.
You have to. You have to be like Teflon. But there's something even trickier listed here. Collusive bidding.
That sounds like a cartel meeting on the front lawn.
It can be. It's when buyers agree to work together to keep the price down. You know, you don't bid, I won't bid, and we'll figure it out later.
How on earth do you spot that?
It's subtle. Body language. Two bidders making eye contact right before a bid. Or a sudden weird drop in momentum when it should be heating up. The auctioneer has to be the referee and break it up in real time.
And speaking of being a referee, what about disputed bidding? This stresses me out just reading it. Two people yell out a number at the same time. Who gets it?
And this is where the auctioneer is judge and jury. There's no instant replay. The protocol says they have to resolve it on the spot. Usually you just go back to the last undisputed bid and call it again. But you have to be so authoritative. If you hesitate, you lose the room.
And you're doing all this while keeping numbers straight in your head.
And while maintaining what the source calls neutrality.
That's a fascinating idea. You're paid by the seller, but you have to be neutral.
In the process, yes. You can't just ignore a bid from someone because you don't like their shirt.
Yeah.
You can't favor one buyer. You're an agent for the seller, sure, but you're also the steward of a fair process for everyone else. Lose that, and you can lose your license.
Okay, so the auctioneer has dodged the hecklers and the cartels. We're at the climax. Section 4, sold or passed in.
The end game.
The source has this term, trial close strategy. What's that?
A trial close is basically testing the waters. It's when they say things like, are we all done or about to sell? They're not actually selling yet. They're just trying to squeeze out one last bid.
Mm. Watching to see if anyone even flinches.
Exactly. And if the sponge is dry, but the price isn't at the reserve, the protocol says they can seek instructions from vendor.
Right. The pause. The auctioneer runs inside the house. I always thought that was just for dramatic effect.
No, that is probably the most stressful moment of the whole auction. They're walking into that kitchen to have a very, very hard conversation. The market is at X. Your reserve is Y. We're not there. They might even be renegotiating the reserve price right there on the spot.
So they have to be a top-tier negotiator, too. Do we sell for this or do we walk away?
That's the conversation. So they come back out, scenario A, the reserve is met. The source talks about the fall of hammer and the closing script.
Knocking down the property.
And once that hammer falls, it is legally binding. No going back. The skill there is just making sure everyone knows the exact moment the sale happened.
But let's talk scenario B. This is the one that really got me. The source says that to prove you're competent, you must call an auction where the property is passed in.
Yes. Pass in property if reserve price is not met.
So to be a professional, you have to prove you know how to fail.
See, that's the thing. It's not a failure. It's a strategy. If you sell a house for $1.1 million just to get it sold, but the seller's reserve was $1.2 million, you've actually failed your client. You've undersold their asset.
Okay. I see. It's about protecting the value.
A true professional has the courage to say, nope, the market isn't here today, and formally pass it in. It's about not panicking and taking a lowball offer.
So what happens then? Everyone just goes home?
Not quite. The source says they must offer highest bidder opportunity to negotiate. This is a crucial rule. The person who made the last highest bid gets the first exclusive right to go inside and negotiate with the owner at the reserve price.
So the public auction ends, but the private deal-making starts.
That's it, exactly. The theater is over, but the negotiation begins.
Yeah.
And the auctioneer has to manage that transition. If they're rude about it or make that highest bidder feel bad, they might just walk away and the whole deal is dead.
So they have to manage the failure of the public event to ensure the success of the private one.
That's a perfect way to describe it.
Okay, so the hammer falls, or it's passed in. Crowd leaves. But according to Section 5, the post-game analysis, the job still isn't done.
Nope. The feedback loop kicks in. The source requires obtaining feedback on auction from vendors and colleagues.
And self-reflection, it literally says they have to review auction performance and document their strengths and opportunities for improvement.
Which is pretty rare for a sales job, right? It's not just, did you make the sale? It's, how was your performance? You have to review the tape.
What are they looking for?
Did I talk too fast? Did I miss a bid from someone in the back corner? Did I lose control when that person's dog started barking?
Always a dog.
It happens. And how you handle those little things, that determines your authority. It's a constant process of refining that performance.
And when you look at the full list of knowledge requirements at the end of this thing,
yeah,
it's overwhelming.
It is.
They need to know council zoning, land titles, defects, environmental issues.
Penalties for breaking the law, risk controls. It's so much more than just shouting numbers.
That's what really stands out to me now. You see the suit and the charisma, but underneath, the source paints this picture of someone who is part lawyer, part ringmaster, and part safety officer.
And part psychologist.
Yes, absolutely. It's a role defined by these strict legislative requirements and ethical practices, not just by who has the loudest voice.
And that structure, that's what protects everyone. Without these protocols, it really would just be a shouting match on a lawn. This whole process is what turns the chaos into a binding contract.
It's definitely going to change how I watch the next auction I see. I'm not going to be watching the price. I'll be looking for the safety check and the legal script.
Watch for the trial close. See if you can spot it when they're testing the crowd.
I will. But before we wrap, I want to leave you with one last thought from the source that's still kind of spinning in my head.
Okay.
It's that idea of neutrality we touched on.
Right, under ethical practice.
It just feels like such a paradox. The auctioneer is hired by the seller to get the highest price possible, to basically take as much money from the buyer as they can. But the source insists they have to maintain neutrality, protect buyers from risk, and make sure it's all fair.
It's the central tension of the entire profession. You have to be a ruthless advocate for one party while being the impartial judge for everybody.
So how do you even balance that?
With a lot of difficulty. If you lean too far towards the seller, you're committing fraud. If you lean too far towards the buyer, you're failing your client. You have to stay perfectly balanced on this constantly shifting platform.
And do it all live, in front of a crowd, while dodging garden gnomes.
While dodging garden gnomes.
That's all for this deep dive. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.